I'm Francis Lam, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. So if I was just looking at the Instagram version of my life right now, I might think that I have been spending the last week on a fun coronavirus lockdown cooking binge. Spanish tortilla one night, creamy pork and chickpea tacos another. But what I wouldn't see is me holding my breath when I walk into the grocery store, carefully staying two steps away from anyone else, and stressing out over whether I should be rubbing every bag of beans down with a sanitizing wipe when I get home. You know, I've never felt more grateful for the food I have than right now, and still I'm honestly a little nervous around it. This is a hard, uncertain time for everyone, and so many things are fraught. Maybe you want to support your local restaurants, but you're not sure if even the takeout is safe. Maybe you're not sure how to get groceries right now, and how safe it is when you get at home. We're all feeling those things and wondering those questions, which is why we were grateful to talk this week with Kenji Lopez Alt. He is an award-winning food science writer. He's the author of a book called The Food Lab, and he consulted with virologists and food safety experts to write a thorough guide to food safety in the time of COVID-19 for Serious Eats. Now, I want to say a couple of things before we actually get to our conversation. The first is, all of this information was current as of March 24th, and Kenji consulted reputable research from the CDC and others, but scientists are learning new things every day about this virus. The second is, you can relax, really. In fact, it's important to relax, and we'll talk about why later on. Your food, wherever it comes from, is very likely to be safe. Yes, you should practice all the good hygiene you've been hearing about. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands a lot with soap, scrubbing for 20 seconds before rinsing, and certainly after going outside and touching stuff other people are near. But there's still lots of other questions, and Kenji and I talk about them. We were in our respective homes, of course, not in studios, so if the audio sounds a little off, or if you happen to hear some kids running in the background, well, you know, we're doing our part to stay inside too. Hey Kenji, I guess I can't even say thanks for coming in because you didn't go anywhere. Thanks for showing up in your own home.
Yeah, thanks for having me on in your home on video, I guess.
Yeah. So yeah, this is broadcasting in the time of COVID-19, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for the incredible story you wrote for Serious Eats, your food safety guide. In this moment, I think a lot of people have a lot of questions about what is safe to eat, what's not safe to eat, how they handle themselves in a store. Is restaurant delivery still okay, even though a lot of restaurants have moved to delivery or takeout? But first, I want to ask you, how are you doing?
We're doing all right. You know, everything, we're kind of taking it day by day. You know, the restaurant obviously took a huge hit, just as every restaurant in the world right now, I think, is doing. You know, we've had to shut down dine-in service, so we're takeout only. What I've been working on recently is a initiative to try and get some of our people, our hourly workers, back into work by cooking meals for people who need them. So, you know, first responders, emergency room personnel, those who are already, you know, people who are already sort of food insecure to begin with, are even worse off now. So we're trying to use all the resources we have at the restaurant to try and get meals out to those people while accepting donations to produce those meals, with the idea that, you know, we'll be able to keep our employees more busy going forward, while also sort of doing good for the community. It's tough though, you know. You know, especially because a lot of people are scared about whether they can eat or can't, what they should be doing, what they should be eating, whether they can cook for themselves, whether they should go shopping at the supermarket, all that stuff. And you know, so I think a lot of people just planned, assuming for the worst, and you know, went out and bought 3 months worth of supplies, 3 months worth of toilet paper, and and so, you know, the dining out and the takeout service has obviously gone way down across the industry. So we're trying to build that back up and make sure that, you know, when things do go back to normal, that people you know, that they'll still have a restaurant to come back to, because, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of closures in the service industry, because, you know, most restaurants don't have the runway to even, you know, lose a week of sales, let alone, you know, 3 months of sales, or however long this is going to end up being. So I think everyone in the industry is trying to get creative, and we're all just doing our best.
Yeah, and I definitely want to get into what we can do as just regular people, mm-hmm. In terms of our own shopping and our own cooking. But just a note on that too, it's like, I do think, you know, this is a cataclysmic event for this industry that brings people so much joy in normal times and mm-hmm. sustenance. And the one thing I do see that gives me some glimmer of hope or humanity is seeing how many restaurants are doing things like yours, you know, like, mm-hmm. okay, well, we can't serve the public for safety, and that's right. But, you know, let's do what we can for each other, and cooking for unemployed restaurant workers, and cooking for mm-hmm. first responders. And it's an industry made of people who want to take care of each other. And I really yeah. see that now.
It's been also really great seeing the number of people who are offering their support to us. You know, some of it financially. You know, we have lots of people who want to donate money. In fact, we have more people who want to donate money now than we have methods of being able to. You know, it's like we've been asking for donations, and people are like, "Well, I live in like Tennessee, and I want to give you money." It's like, how can we do this? Like, we don't really have a way to do that right yet, but we're going to try and get it set up by the end of the week. Like, everything's just kind of. It's like, you know, we're building the plane as we're flying it, and it's everything's just kind of ad hoc as we go. But you know, systems are getting put in place, and it's just been amazing to see how many people are willing to do good when, you know, when times get tough. There's a lot of good people out there, which is great to see.
Yeah, totally. Let's talk about the virus, and talk about your research and the food safety mm-hmm. of this moment. So, you know, I think first we have to caveat everything by saying there's a lot that humanity, scientists don't know about the virus that causes COVID-19. There's new research literally every day, but scientists do generally believe it's primarily transmitted person to person, right? Not by incidental contact with stuff.
Correct.
But there is a theoretical risk anyway of touching stuff that a sick person might have sneezed on mm-hmm. and then getting that into our system. So given that, it does sound like food could be a way of getting infected, right?
Well, yeah, you can't, you know, it is a novel virus, like you said. And so we're still doing research on it. So, you know, there's always a possibility, of course. But what we do know for certain is that by far the majority of cases, in fact every case we've found so far, out of every case we've tracked so far, none have been linked to food or packaging or any kind of, well, fomite is what it's called, like when it gets on something, when it gets on a solid object and gets transferred to a person that way. All the spread patterns we've seen have been based on aerosolized or droplet form. So basically, like when someone sneezes or coughs or breathes very moist air, viral load can get in that moisture into the air, and then you would breathe it into your respiratory system, into your lungs. And that's the main mechanism of transfer, which is similar to how previous coronaviruses like SARS and MERS, mm-hmm. that's how they were spread as well. And again, with those, neither one of those showed any sign of foodborne transmission. Of course, that said, there's always new research coming out, and you know, the article I wrote, I did it based on all the current research, but there's new information coming. Like, I actually have another call scheduled with a virologist this afternoon, specifically to talk about, well, there's this now, they've discovered that the virus, it attaches to these receptors called ACE2 receptors. And some of those are located in epithelial cells, like sort of higher up in the respiratory system. So now there's a theory that maybe you can, you know, it makes it more likely that it would be transferable by swallowing or something like that. Although, you know, again, I want to reiterate that thus far in all the cases that we've tracked, which is many, none of them have been shown to be linked to food. The most convincing thing to me is looking at the studies that were done in Singapore and in Wuhan, particularly in Singapore. They have so the Ministry of Health there has teams of people that go out and conduct really sort of extensive interviews with every positive coronavirus case that they get there. The last time I looked at the data was from a few weeks ago, but at that point they had something like 90% of the cases. They knew exactly the transmission route. 10% of them were unaccounted for, but the other 90%, they knew like, all right, this person got it from this person when they were in a church group together. And then they went to this conference at a hotel and they gave it to these 10 other people. And so they were sort of able to track the spread of the virus. And in those 90% of cases that they were able to account for it, every one of them, none of them were based on food, and every one of them were based on sort of these proximity events where people were in close quarters to each other and breathing in the same air. So, we definitely can't rule out that food is a transmission vector because we just don't know enough. But we can definitely say with confidence that it's not the prevailing method of transmission, and the risk is compared to being close to other people, the risk is relatively low.
Right. So stay home is still the number
one thing. Yeah, stay away from crowds. Stay, if you're going to go shopping, try and go at times when there aren't a lot of people there. What I recommend actually is to look to smaller grocery stores, especially because first of all, the bigger stores, like the big supermarkets and the big box stores, they tend to have lines. Even like Whole Foods, there's lines of people, and a lot of people just aren't really respecting the proximity rules, at least around us. They also tend to run out of certain things faster. But I found that like my local groceries, there's a Latin produce market a block away from my house. There's a Japanese market, a Chinese market. They're much smaller, but they tend to actually be better stocked than the big stores right now because people just don't think to go to them. And of course, a smaller store is better to go to anyway, because you just have, every store, you're channeling people through one doorway, right? And so whether it's a big store or a small store, you're still channeling people through one doorway. So the bigger the store you go into, the higher the number of people that have been channeled through that one little area. So the bigger the chance that you're going to be breathing in air that might contain some of these virally contaminated droplets. So if you go to stores that just have fewer people in them total, you're less likely to pick it up, especially if you go sort of at off-peak hours.
Yeah.
And of course, then you're also supporting your local, your local stores, which is great.
You're listening to a conversation we recorded with award-winning food science writer Kenji Lopez-Alt. We'll be back with him in a minute to talk more about food safety in the coronavirus, including how to stay safe in the grocery store and how to handle your takeout. I'm Francis Lam, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. I'm Francis Lam, and you're listening to The Splendid Table from APM. Hey, so we're spending this episode with the award-winning food science writer Kenji Lopez-Alt. He's a food columnist for The New York Times, who's answering all our questions about food safety and the coronavirus. He's written Food Safety and Coronavirus, a Comprehensive Guide for the website Serious Eats. And we recorded this on March 24th. Let's talk about touching stuff. Mm-hmm. I've been washing my hands obsessively. Like, my hands are totally chapped and dry, and like I need to buy more lotion now. So ironically, I have to go to a different store. But I think there was a study in the New England Journal of Medicine a little while ago that I think has been a lot of people's minds. And it said that, the virus can be detected in the air for a few hours, on cardboard for 24 hours, and on plastic and stainless steel for 72 hours. So I think people heard that and they're like, oh, I can't touch anything anymore.
Right.
Or I can't, to be completely honest, like now if I'm getting packages, I take it into my home, I put it in a room, I close a door, no one touches it if it's not like, perishable, I will let it sit for 72 hours before I then open the package. Maybe that's overkill, but that's just where my brain went. So do you have thoughts on that study? And in terms of our grocery shopping, I mean, what does that mean for, should I not buy lettuce? I can't have lettuce sitting out on the counter for 72 hours.
Yeah, no, these are good questions. And actually, these are the kinds of questions I had initially when I started researching, writing this piece. Initially, it was for my own sake, for my family and for my restaurant. I wanted to know what is safe to be asking our employees to do and what is safe for our customers and what's safe for my family. And so I had a lot of those specific questions, and I posed those specific questions to some food safety experts and some virologists. So according to all the data that we have right now, there are no cases of getting it by touching things and then subsequently touching yourself, but it is theoretically possible that it could happen. So so the recommendations to wash your hands and to wipe down surfaces, that's all very, very sound advice because, one thing to understand is that so there's a difference between being able to detect a virus and that virus still being transmissible. So just because we can take a swab from a table and say there are viral particles here, that doesn't necessarily mean that you then touching that table is going to get you sick. So the virus can't be absorbed through the skin. So there's definitely no problems with just touching it. The issues arise when you touch it and then you touch your face, like you pick your nose or you rub your eyes or you get it near your lips. And then when you breathe in, you might be breathing in some droplets of moisture that have virus on them. There's a few mitigating factors here. One of them is that every time the virus gets transferred from one thing to another, it basically gets diluted. One of the questions I asked specifically was actually about if I have someone, an employee at my restaurant who is a carrier but isn't showing symptoms, and let's say he coughs once on a cutting board and then he assembles a sandwich on that cutting board and then puts that sandwich into a takeout box and then someone takes it home and eats it with their hands, and then that person picks their nose or rubs their eye or whatever, what is the likelihood that some of the virus from my employee's mouth is going to get into someone else's body and make them sick? And so when you look at that pathway, first the virus gets on the cutting board and then it has to transfer from the cutting board to a sandwich, which dilutes it. And then the sandwich goes into a box. Some of that virus gets transferred to the box, which again dilutes it. And then you pick it up, it gets on your hands, which dilutes it again, and then it goes on your face. So the chances that there's like a viable amount of, a viable viral load enough to get you sick on your fingers at that point are very minimal. The food safety expert I talked to, he said it's like a moonshot before you even touch your face in that situation. It's not even clear that the virus can be that you can get the disease COVID-19 by just touching your face. And it's a little bit different talking about viruses versus bacteria. So with a bacteria, you can start with a small amount of bacteria on your food, and under the right conditions, that bacteria is going to multiply. And right. And so the load of bacteria, the load of pathogen is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. With a virus, it's the opposite. A virus can't replicate without a host cell. So the amount of virus that you sneeze out, that's the maximum it's ever going to be. And over time, that's going to decrease no matter what surface it's on. And that includes every time something else touches it and takes some of that virus away, dilutes it. And it also just includes sort of the natural decay, of the virus. So unlike bacteria, you don't have to worry too much about the virus getting more and more and more. And in fact, it's going to get less and less the longer you let it sit there. And the more times you handle it. It does seem really strange. It does, to me, it seemed hard to believe, if someone just sneezes on a piece of lettuce and hands it to me and I put it in my mouth, like, how could I not get sick from that? And so I even asked that specific question, if someone who's sick, I know they're sick, they have a piece of lettuce, they sneeze on it, they put it on a table and walk away, I go pick up that piece of lettuce and eat and put it in my mouth and eat it, what are the chances that I'm going to get the virus then? And the answer is, it really depends on sort of the conditions of the air around, like how much of those droplets are still in the air, how close I got to the place where the person sneezed. So in the end, it's not really the lettuce that's going to be the problem. It's going to be sort of the air around where that person sneezed. Of course, if you take that lettuce and like kind of shake it around in the air and get those droplets in the air into a place where you can inhale them, then that's going to be an issue. But given that it's a respiratory disease, you have to, at least most of the science says that you have to inhale it to be able to get it. And that, and that's coming from basically every single public health organization I've seen around the world. All say the same thing, that there are no known cases of foodborne transmission. It's a respiratory disease. You get it through droplet transmission. All that being said, you know, there are a lot of reasons why you still do want to be very safe about washing your hands, touching surfaces. You know, you definitely don't want to take the chance that you're going to get COVID-19 by touching yourself. But more importantly, there are still, you know, there's still all the other pathogens out there, the E. coli, all the other, you know, Salmonella, all those things that you can possibly get by not maintaining good hygiene protocols in the kitchen, by not washing your hands well. And especially now when the healthcare system is going to be so overloaded, you don't want to take any risks that are going to, even not related to the virus, you don't want to take any risks that are going to maybe get you to the emergency room or make you have to see a doctor, because they're all going to be completely overworked handling this virus as it is. So as much as you can, like whether it's the virus or anything else, you want to try and make sure that you keep yourself safe and healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's a huge thing. You got to do everything you can to keep yourself healthy in general right now, because going to a doctor is going to be tough, and it's going to put more strain on the system. All right, Kendrick. So we're at the grocery store. We've done our shopping. Do you have like checkout line thoughts? Like, what's the best way to?
A few things. So you should. I would recommend going to the self checkout lanes as opposed to the an in person cashier. You know, it's sort of a trade off because at the self checkout lane you have to touch that touch screen that a bunch of other people have been touching. You know, but the trade off on balance, it's better to stay away from other people. It's much more important to stay away from people than it is to not touch things. So I would say it's better to stay away from the checkout cashier. First of all, for their safety, just in case you're a carrier, but also because they could potentially be, you know, they've been coming in contact within, you know, breathing room and sneezing room of a lot of people. And so they could definitely be a carrier as well. So as much as you can, I would avoid sort of getting in proximity of other people, close proximity of other people. The other thing I would recommend is that you don't need to obsessively use hand sanitizer like at home. At home, soap is just as effective at destroying the virus as hand sanitizer is, because it's a lipid coated thing. It has a shell, like a lipid shell, that gets broken down by soap. But when you're out, it's not really practical to wash your hands with soap and water. So I would recommend taking a little bottle of sanitizer with you when you go to the supermarket. And, you know, before you get back in your car, before you touch your car door, before you start grabbing your steering wheel, or before you open your front door, just sanitize your hands so that anything you might have picked up by touching the screens or touching the bags or whatever it is, you're not going to rub off onto your doorways. And also, you know, as much as possible, definitely avoid using cash, even avoid credit cards if you can. You know, if you can go touch-free, like pretty much everyone's phone these days has a touch-free payment option. And, most major cities, most of the markets have touch-free options. So as much as you can, go touch-free with everything. Same when you're picking up food at a restaurant. A lot of places, like what we do, for instance, is we have a table set up front. When you place an order, you place your order online and you pay for it online. We tell you what time it's going to be ready, and we put it on a table. And then, you know, you use the ADA, the handicap button to open the door, walk in, pick up your food, and walk out. And so, you know, no contact with other people. That's really the most important thing we could all be doing right now.
And, you know, a lot of people have been either joking about and or like experiencing and being horrified by, you know, toilet paper shortages and, you know, going to the store and seeing the shelves emptied. I've been reading like news reports to say like the U.S. food supply chain is fine. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be an issue of running out of food. That's not something that we need to be concerned with. We shouldn't be hoarding. Mm-hmm. Have you stockpiled anything? And if not,
you know,
why are you confident that we don't need?
You know, we actually, so at my house we actually have like an earthquake emergency kit. So we've been stockpiling stuff, you know, just in case there's a big earthquake here in California. We have enough supplies for the three of us to last for a couple months already. So we didn't do too much stockpiling on top of that. I got 3 weeks to a month's worth of food, which is what I would recommend. There's no reason to go out and buy 3 months of food, especially because you're just going to get bored eating. If you can't get fresh produce, fresh meat, whatever, you're going to get bored eating it. It's when you go to the supermarket, and especially if you went like a couple weeks ago, it might seem that there's a big food supply issue. But really all of that is sort of temporary. It's all because of hoarding behavior that we had these temporary supply issues. According to all the information that's out there, there shouldn't be any issues with food supply. But again, like this is all new for everyone all around the world. We're still going to be growing food. The couple places where there might be issues is with harvesting. Especially with migrant workers who tend to live in sort of cramped conditions and move around a lot. And mm-hmm. those are both things that are not good when there's a pandemic going around. So how we're going to deal with that, it might be an issue coming up in the future that we're not exactly sure how we're going to tackle. And then the other is how it's going to affect the trucking industry. All indications are that we're not going to have food shortage issues. We might just have to figure out ways to get them, where they need to be. And also, obviously fewer people are going to restaurants and more people are shopping at supermarkets now. So shipping companies have to sort of figure out the logistics of altering those routes and altering their delivery patterns. Everybody's working hard to make sure that their own businesses and their own livelihoods don't fail during this. You can be guaranteed that everybody on the food supply side is going to be working as hard as they can to make sure that they can continue selling the food that they're producing.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Another question about the food supply chain is imported food. Mm-hmm. Because, we first started hearing of this disease in other countries, some people are nervous, like, oh, should we be buying food from mm-hmm. those countries? To your point before, it evaporates, essentially, the virus evaporates, even if it's breaks on down, yeah. materials. Yeah, and, food is being shipped for a long distance, but is there any kind of indication that we should be,
avoiding Chinese food?
It's just like, it's so racist. Yeah, it's just so, like, look, at this point, people are, like, walking around your neighborhood getting each other sick. Like, you don't need to be afraid of a can that came from China that was on a boat 3 months ago.
Yeah, so there, again, there's no indication that there's been any transmission via food or packaging. And yeah, like you said, so, the virus, it lives on hard surfaces the longest. And so far what we see is it's about 3 days. Most canned goods coming from most goods coming from other countries spend longer in transit than 3 days. Much longer, And so the chances that there's something from, say, China on a bottle of soy sauce that you bought, that there's a viral load on there that's going to make it into your supermarket, I mean, the chances are basically zero. There's a much higher chance that, the person stocking the supermarket shelf is going to contaminate it than anybody at the point of origin. So the answer is no. Like, you don't have to avoid imported foods at all. Chinese Americans are Americans. You don't have to avoid your neighbors, because of their ethnicity any more than you would anyone else. We should all be avoiding each other right now. It's still fine to take out food from the Chinese restaurant, just as it's still fine to order a pizza or order whatever you want, as long as it's coming from a restaurant. If you trusted the restaurant before to be maintaining proper hygiene standards, then you can trust them now. Restaurants, restaurant workers, there's very strict rules about how food is being handled and hygiene protocols, everything from the placement of the sink to how frequently people wash hands to keeping logs of temperatures. And all those things are designed to keep you safe. The chance of food getting contaminated in a restaurant is probably lower than the chance of it getting contaminated, in your own home. Like, people in restaurants are probably cleaner about how they cook than you are at home. That said, when you're getting something from a black box and you don't know exactly what happened to it on the way to your door, it's very understandable that people are nervous about those things. I wouldn't judge anyone for wanting to just cook their own food all the time. But certainly, like, you don't have to avoid products that were made in China or made anywhere else, any kind of imported products, olive oil from Italy, you don't have to avoid olive oil from Italy, even though people there are having a tough time.
Yeah. Okay. So if we do get carry out or we mm-hmm. do get delivery right now, it sounds like, again, most of the advice is you're probably going to be fine. But if we want to be extra safe, do we go home mm-hmm. and reheat it? Is there a killed step that you would want to do at home? Would you want to eat it off a plate rather than off of the package?
So both of those things. So yeah, if you do want to be extra careful, and honestly, there's nothing wrong with being extra careful in these times. With pathogens, viruses, and bacteria, destroying them and making food safe to eat is a function of temperature and time. And so the higher the temperature you cook it to, the less time it has to spend at that temperature to bring the bacterial or viral load down to a safe level. Those sort of temperature and time graphs look different for every pathogen, but they all sort of fall within the same range. And right now, what we do know is that for the coronavirus, the current coronavirus, 3 minutes at 149 degrees Fahrenheit, that's about 65 degrees Celsius, a little bit less than that, 3 minutes at or above that temperature is enough to basically sterilize it. I think it's a 5-log reduction. So for every 100,000 viral particles in there, you're left with one after 3 minutes at 149 degrees or higher. So yeah, so if you want to be really extra safe, definitely you can reheat your food at home, stick with foods that that can be reheated. And then use a thermometer and just check that, you know, the internal and external temperatures hit 149 degrees and stay there or higher for at least 3 minutes before you eat it. As for the packaging, I would definitely recommend if you get takeout containers, transfer things onto a clean plate, toss out the takeout containers, wash your hands carefully before you sit down and start eating dinner, and try and make sure that those takeout containers, you know, don't touch the table where you're going to be eating, or if they do, to make sure to clean the table well. Similarly, if you're going to be buying groceries, you know, with fresh produce, there's only so much you can do. You can wash it. Some people recommend washing with soap. You know, they do make special vegetable soaps that that can be effective. So basically, anything that'll cut grease will also destroy virus. So they do make special vegetable soaps that work. If you're buying dry goods, you know, hard things that come in watertight containers like cans and bottles, you can wash those just the same way you would wash your hands. And things that come in bags like, you know, a bag of flour, a bag of sugar, just transfer it to a clean container, throw out the bag it came in, wash your hands carefully before you use it, or before you put it away.
You don't have to be paranoid about it. Just be safe. You can take these extra precautions, but don't live in like abject terror.
Definitely don't live in abject terror. You know, everybody has their own level of risk assessment. You want to make sure, you know, whatever your level of risk assessment is, you definitely don't want to put other people at risk. So be careful about how you expose yourself to other people. In your own home, you know, it's like you're making the decisions for yourself, and you have to decide what you're willing to go through. But yeah, you should know the information out there, and you definitely shouldn't panic, because, you know, stress, lack of sleep, those are things that concretely compromise your immune system. And the more stressed out you are, the more likely you are to get sick, not necessarily from coronavirus, but the more likely you are to get sick from anything. So you definitely want to try and relax right now, like relaxing, getting good sleep, making sure that you're in a good state of mind, or as good a state of mind as you can be, is actually very important right now for everyone.
That's the food science writer, Kenji Lopez-Alt, author of The Food Lab, and we'll be back with more, including how we know when old food is really too old. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. I'm Francis Lamb, and you're listening to The Splendid Table from APM. We're spending this episode talking about food safety and the coronavirus with Kenji Lopez-Alt. He's the author of the award-winning book, The Food Lab. He's a columnist for The New York Times, and he's the chief culinary advisor to Serious Eats, where he just published Food Safety and Coronavirus, A Comprehensive Guide. Okay, so a lot of us are at home right now, and some of us are like reacquainting ourselves with like the nether reaches of our pantry, the very back of our freezer. I laid eyes the other day on a bottle of ketchup my friend had that was brown inside the bottle, and the expiration date was 2003. We threw that out. I'm not that desperate for ketchup, but I think we all know expiration dates on packaged goods, canned goods, are often you can still safely eat them after the expiration date. Do you have guidelines for like how long, how old is too old?
It's really difficult to say how old is too old. No, so yeah, expiration dates are always just an estimate because there's no way that the manufacturer is going to know exactly how it's being stored, how it's being shipped, and all those things can factor into the expiration dates. I would say that for the things that people are most concerned about, things like eggs and milk, honestly, like the sniff test is a pretty good way to tell. Like your milk is going to be fine until it's not. Mm-hmm. Eggs, the expiration date. Generally, the expiration, it depends on the state, but generally the expiration date on the carton is 30 days after the date it was packed. And eggs are usually actually good for about 60 days at least after they were packed. So, you know, if you're a little worried about them, crack them into a separate bowl before you eat them. As for canned goods, usually the expiration date is also fine to ignore. You know, as long as the can's not bulging, the can's not cracked, there's no sign that there's any kind of, bacterial activity going on inside it, you're probably going to be fine. If it's 5 years old, maybe throw it out. But if it's off by a few months, if it's off by even a year, I would say in the vast majority of cases, it's fine. Jarred goods, make sure that the button on the top is still sealed because that's a good indication that there's no activity going on inside, no gases being produced or anything like that. And of course, as with anything, again, like I want to stress that, like, you know, you're the one who ultimately decides your own risk factor. Don't do anything that's going to get you in the hospital. But if you're at home, you're quarantining the way you should, you're not doing anything dangerous, you're remaining stress free, like you're probably going to be fine.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kenji. This is really informative, really reassuring. I know this is the caveat you would add to it. Science is always changing. If we do find new information, some of which may contradict mm-hmm. what we talked about today, but it sounds like just keep being safe, wash your hands, just, mm-hmm. don't be reckless, avoid other people, stay at home, keep your neighbor safe, keep your family safe, and, don't live in fear of it. You know, like we should try to live as
relaxed as possible,
happy and fulfilling a life as possible, even though it's hard right now.
Yeah, and I would also add, whenever you hear a bit of information or a bit of advice, check the sources. Like, make sure that your whatever you're reading is being backed up by actual, scientific study or by some recognized public health organization, because there is a ton of fake news going around about this, and it's especially dangerous right now. Because, any wrong bit of information can either cause a panic or it could potentially get a lot of people sick. So you want to really be extra careful about checking the sources. Whatever channel you get your news from, make sure that that news is being backed up by proper scientific research and public health organizations.
Yeah. Don't forward any emails that have a link to, like, wefoundcoronaviruscure.com.
No.
Tell my mom that. Thank you so much, Kenji. This is really reassuring.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope, like I said, there's always new information coming out. We are planning on keeping that article up to date as possible. If anything changes at all, like we have no problem like saying, hey, we were wrong. We hope that we're not wrong about anything, but I'm going to be constantly keeping in touch with virologists, with food safety experts, epidemiologists, to make sure that whatever the advice we're giving on that article is up to date with what the current recommendations are and what this current scientific consensus is.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and stay safe. Stay home.
You too.
Kenji Lopez-Alt is the author of Food Safety and Coronavirus, a comprehensive guide on the website Serious Eats. He's also a New York Times cooking columnist, chef partner at Wurst Hall in San Mateo, California, and the author of The Food Lab. His newest book is a kid's book. It's called Every Night is Pizza Night. And Kenji is also raising money right now to cook and donate meals to families in his area affected by COVID-19. If you want to support that, go to patreon.com/KenjiLopezAlt. Again, scientists' understanding of this virus is continuing to evolve. We hope you found this information useful, but stay updated. And to do that, as Kenji mentioned, he'll be updating that piece on Serious Eats whenever there's new information available, and we'll do our best to get you updated too. So, like I said, we're all at home. We are producing this show from our closets and kitchen tables, and honestly, we want to hear from you on what you want to hear from us at this time. And joining me now is our managing producer, Sally Swift. Hey, Sal.
Hey, Francis. You know, I loved that interview with Kenji. And oddly, the thing that I've been thinking about the most after working with him is that comment he made about getting enough sleep and not stressing out. It has really struck home in this house. You know, it's not a race, what we're doing. It's really about endurance, and taking care of ourselves right now is one of the best things we can do.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to feel relaxed. It's hard to be chill. And like, I don't want to be, you know, super Pollyanna and be like, hey, cooking, it's so great. You're going to love it. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's stressful to cook right now. Like, there's no question, but it has been really nice to see too how much people are finding, if they're able to find pleasure in that as well. Like my wife, her office, they have, you know, lots of video conference calls now, and they have one that they started to do every week where they don't talk about work at all. And all they do is kind of say like what they've been doing to help themselves relax and tips and, you know, and sharing recipes and talking about what they've been cooking and just as a way to have like human connection and to talk about the stuff they're cooking and stuff that makes them feel grounded. And I think that is something that is helpful for our bodies right now that we're going to need.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I also want to say to everyone that it has been challenging for this team to stay connected with you, with our listeners in the way that we'd like to. Things have changed so fast. We've had to set aside a lot of our work and some good interviews that are simply not the right tone for now. You know, we don't have access to a studio. We can't take your calls, which is a total bummer because we'd love to be talking to you. So we have been working hard, loading up the website. We've been posting ideas on social, dropping extra podcasts in our feed. Everyone on the team has been kind of fun. We've been pulling out our favorite interviews that kind of involve home cooking from the archives, the really good ones and the recipes and the ones that have really stuck with us over the years. So check them out. And please, we want to hear your voices. Send us voice memos. Record them on your phone. Send them to us at contact@splendidtable.org or get to us on social at Splendid Table. Stay in touch. We really want to know what you need. And you, Mr. Lamb, what do you need? How are things going?
God, I could probably use a couple years training on how to work and run a homeschool and a dining hall at the same time. I mean, honestly, I really can't complain because we're safe and we're healthy. And I know so many people are going through so much right now. But, you know, I'm not going to lie. It's been stressful and overwhelming at times. We're co-quarantining with another family, which has been great because we're not just, like, staring at each other all day long. But it also means, like, you know, I'm cooking dinner for seven people every single night.
That's a change.
Yeah. But we're, you know, we're finding a rhythm. And, you know, something I think people have been struggling with is like how to shop in this time. It's certainly something we were struggling with. How do you minimize your exposure? How do you not go to the store, you know, every couple of days? And, you know, yes, we bought rice and we bought dried beans and we bought canned food and we have all that stuff. We're not hoarding, but we have like enough to get us through for a couple of weeks if we need it. But then, you know, you have fresh produce and meat and fish and things like that that you'll want to have. You want to be able to make sure that you're cooking food that not just nourishes your body, but like makes you feel good to eat and that you love eating, right? So something I've been thinking about a lot in terms of the shopping is how do you buy more produce now that can last you a week and a half, maybe even 2 weeks?
Yeah, the sturdy stuff, right?
Yeah, right? So like, when we go to the store, it's definitely buy some greens for salad. We can have salad for the first couple of days, but then buy hearty greens like kale. Kale, if you put in a plastic bag and you know, keep it like nice and wrapped up in your fridge, like that'll last you over a week easily. Cabbage, I have like three heads of cabbage, the all size of my head in the fridge right now. Because a head of cabbage can last in your fridge for honestly like 2 weeks easy, maybe three. You can always
sturdy soldier.
Yeah, you can always like if you're just needing something fresh, you know, 10 days into being in your house, you can cut that thing up. You can make a quick coleslaw like the cabbage. Like you don't have to make the mayo thing. Like I love just salting the shredded cabbage, letting it like drain some of its juice out, squeeze it, and then just like some vinegar and olive oil, a little salt and pepper, and it's like fresh. It just feels so good to have that kind of crunch. When you just need something that feels like it, you know, it touched the sun at some point, things like that. What are you doing?
You know, I have been, I am in place with my husband and my 19-year-old, which, I mean, I love having her home. She really needs to learn how to cook. She needs to step up in a way that she just simply has not. And that has been an interesting thing to kind of see. You know, I've been doing a lot of, weirdly, when I go to the grocery store, the thing that I really stock up on, my little bit of hoarding, is I've been buying so much ginger because I am such a believer in ginger tea for keeping your chest clear. So it's a little bit of my paranoia buy. Does I have all this ginger around. It's actually lots of people are not buying ginger, so it's been pretty easy to get my hands on. We've been doing what you do. You know, you get meat and you cook it. For some weird reason, here in D.C., spare ribs were all over the place, so I picked up some of those and did a really, really great, super simple, with just like a bottle of Jollof spice mix that I shook all over the ribs and put them in the oven at 325 for 4 hours. They were delicious and lasted 2 days. I always, every morning, I make a big pot of either barley or farro or some kind of grain to have around the house. And we find we're dipping into that a lot because we're all weirdly eating more than we would normally eat, right?
Yeah.
It's our one activity. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally. No, I love that idea. Like, I've been doing that too. It's like, everyone's like, what do I do with beans? And I get it. Like, you don't want to live a life where, like, you're only eating beans. I love beans, but, like, you don't want to eat only beans for, like, the rest of, like, you know, living memory. But having a pot of grains cooked, having plain beans just kind of cooked in the fridge, it's great cold. You can make salads. You can, like, saute them with butter and some vegetables, and it's, like, a nice side. It's just, like, have things that you can make dinner come together pretty quickly. I think having lots of condiments is key right now. You mentioned ginger. I bought like 2 pounds of ginger and 6 bunches of scallions. I'm going to make a huge batch of my ginger scallion sauce.
Yeah, that is a good idea.
Yeah, like recipes on splintthetable.org, but like, or find it anywhere on the internet. But it adds, you know, you basically mince up scallion and ginger and salt it, and then you heat a bunch of oil, dump it on top. It sizzles it. It sort of like very lightly fries it, and it adds so much flavor to anything. And if, you know, you just need to get dinner on the table quick. It's, well, if you had that rice in the fridge already, you had that ginger scallion sauce, you scramble an egg and like a little soy sauce on top, and that's a great meal. You know, just like, so I'm thinking a lot about strategies, not so much recipes right now.
Mm-hmm. One last question for you. How are you doing with the little ones? You have 3 kids you're working with, right? That's what you're going to call it.
Yeah, we have one, and our friends have 2. And it is. It's like, you know, we're trying to figure out how to like do childcare while we're all like working our jobs and all that stuff. It's tricky, but it's so sweet. Like, my wife is like amazing. She's a genius. And she's like, well, one thing too is like, we're not wasting any food, right? Like, we're not going to the store. You're not throwing away the apple core or whatever, whatever. And she started picking out the seeds from the apple cores. And then she started sprouting the seeds with the kids, and they're amazed by it. So every day they go look at, you know, and I don't, you can look, Google it up, see how you do it. But like, they like taped it to the window, and every day the kids are walking to the seeds and seeing the little sprouts grow. And they're so excited. Nice. And they're drawing them in the little books. And like, we're just doing all these like goofy home activities, but you know, making hummus with them, or making, I don't know if you've ever done this, but like, if you cut up a banana and freeze it, and then you just put it in a food processor or blender, it blends up into something that's like ice cream. And oh my God, the kids just made ice cream, right? Like, that blew their minds. So like, these little cooking projects that you can do in half hour chunks has been a lifesaver. And like, writing a schedule. So we actually have a schedule, like 10 o'clock is snack time, you know, 10:30 to noon is activity time. And, you know, we can trade off and we can take shifts. And keeping everyone to a schedule has really saved a lot of the moment-to-moment, oh my God, what do we do now, stress.
You don't want feral children?
Yeah. I mean, they might just go feral anyway, but yeah. I mean, I do think that, like, just really setting a schedule and keeping to it is really, really, really helpful right now. Because I think so much decision fatigue comes from literally the, oh my God, what do I do now? What do I do now? What do I do now? If you look at the schedule, it's like, oh, it's 12:45. It's time for, you know, tuna sandwiches today. Like, it really takes a lot of the burden off your shoulders.
Yep. Take care, everyone. Know we're thinking about you all. Please stay in touch, okay?
Yeah. Send us your questions. We would love to answer them on the show. Well, that is our show for the week. We hope you found it helpful. I know we, as a team, felt a lot of relief after we talked to Kenji. Thank you for listening. Take care. Stay home if you can. Be safe and keep your community safe. We'll talk to you next week. Our show is produced by APM, American Public Media, and is listener-supported listening. That means we're supported by you. Thank you so much. You can listen to all of our podcasts, including our latest collection we're calling Extras, where we're bringing back some of the most helpful or inspiring conversations around home cooking to help you with all the extra cooking you're doing these days. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe to our weekly email, Weeknight Kitchen. We deliver recipes straight to your inbox every Wednesday to make your dinner time a little easier. Sign up at splendidtable.org. Our show comes together with the help of our team, Jenny Lubke, Jennifer Russell, Erica Romero, Chip Walton, and Sally Swift. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is APM, American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.